Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a presentation of Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Matt Bennett, let's start with you. What kinds of things should we cover for the day? What's on your list?
Well, I'll probably talk a little bit about, acreage situation with the report. I think it sure does look to me that there's been a fair amount of corn being bought while soybeans have faded just a little bit. And then I probably would like to talk a little bit about demand moving forward and what the other guys' opinions are when you look at the corn that we're burning through right now for ethanol exports not being so abysmal in livestock numbers.
And Pete Manhart, Bates Commodities?
I think he pretty well covered all that. The acres, I think the corn's the biggest we'll see, and I think the beans are the smallest we'll see on acres. You look at weather and planting progress, and as we go forward, does the South plant much corn, or do they put a lot of beans in where corn was intended?
And Dan Zwicker.
I don't have a lot to add other than, it's quite interesting that the central bankers around the world continue to ease quantitative ease, and the dollar is continuing to weaken, and I think that in the spy itself is generally supportive to the overall commodity complex.
Well, let's start there. Tell me a little bit about what you see on the world front as it relates to the U.S. dollar.
Well, I'm just one that that's all we've done for several years now, basically since the financial crisis that we had in 08 is quantitative easing, and I think the central bankers have printed probably as much money as they can print to do any good, and it's to the point now where I don't think it's doing any good as far as growing the global economy, and I think what you're going to see is people are going to lose confidence in paper money. And you're going to see a big run, I think, in the metals market. And that's going to lead, I think, the rest of the commodities higher as we go down the road.
And the U.S. will be positioned as an exporter of commodities to take advantage of this?
Hopefully, we'll at least be much more competitive in the world market. We are never the most or the least cost seller of grain because even, as long as I've been watching commodities, which goes back as old as dirt is that the as long as our competitors have a large supply, they will always find a way to sell it cheaper than what we sell it for. But it will help us at least regain some of the market share that we've lost over the past couple of years with the stronger dollar this past year or so.
Well, let's talk a little bit about exports. Matt, you mentioned them in two forms, of course, this relating to corn. One would be just plain old corn exports. The other would be through ethanol. What have you seen from the EIA numbers? That's the Energy Information Agency numbers, or just ethanol production in general and its usage?
The interesting thing, looking at ethanol, the corn used for ethanol, for several weeks in a row now has been significantly more than what the what we need to stay up with the USDA goal. And so, I think 3 weeks in a row we were over 104 million bushels that we've used. And then, yesterday we were backed off a little bit. We were still about 5 million bushel more than what we really needed to burn through. And so, you know, if I look at those numbers, it suggests to me if they were able to continue to be grinding and whenever profitability was non-existent, if there at all, you know, it was small, you know, then whenever crude oil rallied back up, obviously it eased things up just a little bit. We've seen really good production there. I think from the export perspective, you know, again, today we had a pretty decent number. It wasn't anything to wow you, but still significantly better than what we'd seen for several weeks in a row. And we've had, you know, a good run here the last 6-8 weeks. So, you know, to me, I think that we're probably going through a little bit more corn than maybe what some people thought we were going to. And then, of course, looking at, you know, the pork industry has crept back into some profitability this last few months. And then, obviously, cattle numbers are up from a year ago. So I think that we've got plenty of mouths to feed as well.
When you look forward, Matt, do you believe ethanol usage will remain strong through the summer months? That's normally the higher driving season, and Americans have been putting more miles on.
You know, to me, that would stand to reason that would be the case. You know, bottom line, gas relative to the last several years is fairly cheap. And so I think that they're not going to back off on mileage by any means on how much they drive. Now, obviously, cars are more efficient every year. But, you know, we all know that as far as the world goes, there's more cars on the road than what we've ever seen. So I definitely think that demand's going to stay pretty strong through the summer months, in my opinion.
For ethanol, we can run at about 120% of boilerplate, or what's listed, I think, as on each of those plants. However, we're running relatively close to the maximum level of corn that we can grind for USDA, or the 10% blend ball, and production is about the same. Is there really very much room to grind that much more corn in the United States?
You know, I don't know that there's room to grind a whole lot more than what we're going through, but it's been impressive to see how much we've been going through recently. Really, this marketing year, once we got up and going, it's been pretty impressive to look at. So I guess my expectations is that eventually they'll have to maybe tick that up just a little bit, which every little bit helps. And so, you know, my personal opinion is they might take it up another 25 million bushels once all said and done.
Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities, you mentioned weather. It's been interesting both in the Southwest for the hard red winter wheat crop in a fairly large area that stretches from Texas to Nebraska, at least according to Mike Tenora on T-Storm on Thursday afternoon. And then you've got the Delta region, which has been really wet. Which one's the more important of the two that we should talk about, or we can take up both?
Well, for wheat out west, this just prediction of rains has pushed it down a lot this week. And then in the south, not planting corn because it's been too wet makes the industry think less corn acres and more bean acres. And so you see corn up nicely for the last few days and beans down. So I think the weather right now, cool and wet in the Midwest, we only need a week or two to really plant most of it. And that will eventually happen, but in the Southeast, they have to decide soon whether they're going to plant corn or not. And if it gets too late, they will plant more beans because the corn can't handle that heat later on.
Hey, you've had a week to talk to producers and other folks about the prospective plantings report. Have you listened enough to know whether people are changing their minds on the mix of acreage that they're going to put in the ground for corn and soybeans?
In the Midwest, I think they're pretty set in their ways if they push the pencil. Corn isn't as good as it was, and beans are better than it was, but if you've already put anhydrous on, you're kind of stuck. So I think there will be a little bit of corn in the Midwest not get planted, and it'll be put into beans. I don't know about all these fringe acres they're talking about getting planted to corn. As we go later on in the Midwest, the weather will be a bigger factor. Right now, we have plenty of time.
Dan Zwicker, you live in the Fringe Acre area. Of course, this was all done pretty much in your area before the prospective plantings report came out. Did the planters roll in Texas hard for corn?
They've had good years, a couple good years with corn. This is still a big Milo state, too. There's more corn acres at least driving between here and Houston. If you get down south of Houston, down into that Corpus area, then you're going to see a lot of corn. And of course, it's quite a ways along because it got planted, in early February. Up here in, I know they call us Central Texas, but we're mostly North Texas. Some of the early stuff was okay. It made it through some heavy rains, but then they've had to come back and they've had to replant some of it. So they're running a little bit behind about half of it. But, yeah, you can drive around, and there's a lot of corn around Texas. But, again, when you're talking about Texas, you're not talking about a big deal. Because it's all fed corn and we're a deficit state. So most of the corn is railed into the panhandle where all the feedlots are. Corn around here is just kind of corn to feed a few head of cattle here and there and a few hogs, but nothing big.
Hey, Dan, I think it's time for you to tell us about that voodoo that you do so well. You've got all kinds of things that you've been looking at in terms of sunspots and your technical side. What do you see when you look out into the summer months this year?
Well, just looking at pure raw cyclical data that I look at, I think wheat and soybeans were already turning to the upside when we were up there at the beef house there in early March. And I thought that corn probably wasn't going to be able to get any kind of bottom in until maybe you got, past the report or into April. And I think the acreage report was such a shock that it went ahead and put in the 40-week cycle low here, and now we're climbing out of a 40-week, 45-week cycle on corn. Beans are already in the up phase of their 36 to 40-week cycle, so I think both those commodities, wheat's going to be a little trickier. It may be more of a sideways market depending upon how harvest goes. And, of course, it will depend upon how the weather plays out. But actually, even wheat is in a situation where I think all of these commodities could strengthen as we go into late summer, early fall. So when I look at it from a cyclical basis, I'm quite friendly. And it tells me that there's going to be some form of weather issues that probably come into play. My cyclical work in the dollar tells me it's going to continue to weaken into June, July. So I think that's another 2-3 months of weakness of the dollar. And I think that will all be supportive to my ideas that corn and soybeans are going to, or at least they have an opportunity to move higher as we go on into late summer, early fall. So I'm still in the camp that statistically the odds still favor that we make new season highs in both corn, November beans and November and December corn. But I also realize that we've got a big crop coming. And if the weather is favorable, if all those acres get planted and the weather is favorable, it's going to be very difficult to get the market to rally. So I still think farmers probably need to be defensive in nature, defend prices, but continue to keep the door open for prices that look to me could strengthen as we go on into late summer, early fall.
I think, Matt, this is where you stand as well, defend prices and opportunities, correct?
Yeah, I think, as we sit here right now, to me, there's a, the market typically gives us an opportunity. We, like Dan said, there should be some sort of a weather event. And obviously, none of us knows to what extent that might be, but let's just say that we stay wet this spring and we'll end up planting 90.5 or 91 million acres. That's still a lot of corn. But bottom line is, if we do transition into a La Nina type situation and we have, any sizable amount of the Corn Belt get into a hotter, drier situation, then I think that you could see a fair amount of volatility. So I think that producers need to you know, in my opinion, some of these call option strategies have been awfully cheap, especially after the report, you know, put a little bit of a trap in place. You know, take advantage of cheap call options now instead of selling the corn during the summer rally and then trying to cover the bushels then, because typically it's quite a bit more expensive to do it. I'd rather do it ahead of time. And then maybe I had kind of a courage strategy, if you will. It makes it a little bit easier to sell the corn because you already know you're covered, just in case the market continues to rally.
Pete, how do you set them up to do those kind of things? What do you do? What do you tell them, and what kinds of strategies do they put forward then?
Well, you look at buying calls and then selling a further out call, or if you're just going to hang on to the grain, you look at maybe the other side protecting the downside. But yeah, you have to be willing to be flexible and ready to move, and I think that's a big part of it. But how far can we go into regular weather? Can we go back over 4 in December? We're at 375. 4 is 25 cents away. I don't know. I'd be probably looking at buying some kind of calls and then selling something 30 to 40 cents higher, and then you're able and free to sell on bounces up.
Now, what kind of cost is there involved in that strategy? What does it cost to buy the options at this point?
In corn, you can probably put a 40-cent spread on for about a dime, maybe 11 cents. On beans, I would have to look, but there you're going to go out further as far as a wider spread because beans can move a lot quicker. But, you know, beans came up, what, 60-some cents? We're 12 to 15 off the high just this week from last week. So, I mean, when you go up a bunch, like 9:30, I think, was we went over 9:30 in November just 2 or 3 days ago. Here we are at 9:19. So you got to be ready to either protect the downside or buy something on the upside, buy a 9:50 and sell a 10:20, or buy a something at the money and sell something 80 cents higher. And be ready to sell cash then as it goes up. As Matt said, you're long anyway in those calls.
Dan, I want to go at this from a different perspective. You worked in the grain industry for a few years post your AgriVisor time, both with CGB and ADM. How do they come into a season like this where they're looking at large carryouts, and what kind of infrastructure problems do they try to avoid, and how do they get themselves set up?
Well, the biggest thing is the first thing they got to do is originate grain, and that's why they have elevators. Grain companies or processors or end users, the first thing they got to do is originate grain to get that grain so they can trade that grain then into the world market. And that's one of the reasons why you see all these grain companies offering farmers all of these derivative type contracts with little charge or no charge. And of course, that's putting a lot of pressure on little IB brokerage firms, because the grain companies offer it with no margin call requirements or anything. So they get real aggressive in trying to buy as much grain as they can early. And they're, of course, they're always wanting to buy. As far as I think a processor goes, they're going to probably play it pretty close to the vest. They don't get real aggressive for the most part. End users don't really go out more than 60 days. If prices were just right, they may go out 90 or something like that. But 60 days is plenty ownership for them, and they have a hard time accumulating that, especially this last year or year and a half. And you can see that being reflected in basis levels, that the grain company or the grain divisions of the processors had difficulty in origination, and of course the basis levels was what they used to originate grain, by buying grain from other elevators and, of course, encouraging farmers to move grain, you know, into the pipeline with basis levels. Now, the farmers probably put on more basis contracts in history probably this past year, which is it's a good tool. because they are able to generate some cash. They're still able to be long the board, because basically that's what they are, is going to be long whatever basis that's under, whether it was under the March contract or the May or July. So they're holding basically a long position without the worry of having margin calls, but they do have the worry of maybe selling it at a lower price. But the good thing about a basis contract, the farmers did move them into the pipeline, and we used that grain up. And that's what I was fearful of on the stocks report, that the stocks number might come in larger than what the trade was looking at, and basically it was pretty much on par. So our usage is pretty well on par of what everybody's projecting. So at least we don't have, you know, that issue to deal with. So eventually, I think these grain companies, depending upon if we'd ever get into a weather market, I think you would have to see these grain companies get real aggressive to try to get some ownership, because I don't think they have as much ownership as they would like to have. Going into the summer, especially when you got prices at these levels, they like to have ownership because probably at this point the risk is more to the upside than maybe to the downside until we know a little bit more about how the crop grows.
Matt, this brings me to ownership as it relates to both old and new crop. And I think as Dan laid it out, that the grain elevator system would prefer to own more than they do at this point, certainly of the old crop. And honestly, they don't own very much at all of the new crop. What opportunities are there? And we haven't talked at length for a while about the divide that runs from, say, Springfield, Missouri to Toledo, Ohio on a diagonal as to the haves and have-nots for both the corn and soybean supply. How do you put that all into perspective?
Well, I think whenever you look at basis levels, when you get east of our part of the world, there's places where it's been pretty interesting to see just how strong some of these basis levels are, especially when you get really far east, like out, you know, in the Pennsylvania and New York. You know, there's a lot of dairies, and, you know, they have ethanol plants out there. Some of those guys this year have been running 50 and 60 over. So there's definitely been some good opportunities, but it's also been tough, conversely speaking. You know, whenever you look at guys in the Dakotas, they're still struggling. You know, I was just up in northern South Dakota a couple weeks ago, and they're running, 75, 80 under. So they definitely got some issues with that. But, you know, looking at a basis contract, I guess, real quick, I've been telling guys it is a good tool. I agree with Dan. The only thing that scares me is, you know, this time of year, if a person locks in too much on a basis contract and the market ends up going lower, say when you turn around and the spring ends up not so stressful, they're completely at the mercy of the market, first of all. And second of all, this time of year at least, you know, if the market moves lower, most likely what you're going to see is the basis is going to appreciate. And so if that happens and you've got it locked in, you're getting hurt by the market and, you know, you're also not participating in the basis improvement.
Yeah, to clarify, Dan, I think you were talking about basis contracts that all have already been put in place, and
right,
that the grains and that clearly the grain has been moved, because that's what showed up for you, at least in the grain stocks report, right?
Right, but prices haven't done much. We've stayed basically in a sideways range, and that's the disadvantage of the basis contract, is the farmer turns over ownership to the end user. And therefore the end user doesn't have to really bid up the price, or they don't have to go in and buy futures and try to force delivery of grain. Instead, the farmer gives it to them by the basis contract, so prices don't go anywhere. But once they use their basis corn up, then right now, most of your, probably your grain companies or grain elevators, whether they're co-ops or privately owned or owned by a major grain company, they're probably they're moving their piles or finishing up their piles because they want to get those corn piles up and moved out before the warm weather starts in. So most of them, so now I would say these piles have kind of probably got the end user enough inventory to last them maybe here another month or two, but they're going to probably depend upon how planting goes and how farmers let loose of the remaining inventory. They're hoping that the farmers will let loose of that inventory probably as we get into June. But who knows what kind of weather market, if we're in a weather market by then or not. But that's where crunch time is going to come. If we're not in a weather issue market of some kind by June, then these burdensome old crop inventory could start coming to town and we could have a collapse in the market from a fundamental perspective. That's, you know, you kind of look at that. But technically, I really like the corn chart. And, you know, I think the first objective here is to pop out last year's high up there around 440 area. And, you know, one of these days we're going to do a 50% retracement of the decline off of the 843 high, which takes you, you know, back to 580 at some point. But that could be a year or two down the road. But when you just look at the corn chart, you look at the 2008 high, and then we spent the last part of 2008, all of 2009, and the first half of 2010 kind of going sideways. And then all of a sudden we shot on up and we made our high up there at that 796. Now that's kind of what we've done here in corn. We had our 318 high there in or 318 low in 14, and now we've been basically trading inside that 318 was the extreme low. The extreme high was last summer's high of 440, but for the most part we've been between $4 and 350, and I think eventually we're going to break out of that, and then and we're going to probably try to challenge this 440 area. If we get the right kind of combination with a weaker dollar and some weather issues, I think we can pop to that 440 area pretty quickly, I think.
Pete Manhart, anything to add on this topic? If not, USDA's WASD report is due out next week, and I want to know whether you think they'll lower the soybean projection for Brazil.
Well, they did lower it a little, and I think that could, you know, help the beans a little, but I think the weather here with wetness in the south is helping to hold them down. So the projections we've been talking about, I think, are possible. I don't know what the high on the beans could be if we have problems, but, you know, if we have any kind of weather possibilities, we should see jumps that should be ready to be taken advantage of on sales.
Matt, your expectations for the WASD report
next
week?
Well, I think, you know, it'll be interesting if you plug in 93.6 with the with trend line yields for this next year's carryout, it could get pretty interesting. But I don't think that's anything that people aren't expecting. So, you know, I think that it's probably going to be a little bit less of an event than what we had, this past week by all counts. And so, I'm not really looking for a ton of volatility coming out of that report. I think for the most part, it's going to be known stuff that we're going to be looking at.
Of course, the April report is generally not a big report that moves the marketplace. However, once we get to May, the United States Department of Agriculture will take its first stab at the coming crop in the U.S., or the 16-17 corn and soybean crop, and what those numbers will look like. I will say that next week, the day after the USDA report, Scott Irwin and Daryl Good will release on the Farm Doc Daily website, and I urge you to go read this today, the precursor article, and they'll use a brand new model to help them try to come up with a supply and demand table for the United States. So they'll be out a month ahead of the USDA with some numbers and what they think not only the size of the crop might be under current and normal conditions, but what the average cash price for the marketing year will be as well. Let's get a final number. Oh, I should tell you where that's at. It's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now let's get some final thoughts from everybody. I think I'll start with you, Pete Manhart. Final thought for the day?
Well, we've come a little ways up on the corn, and I think that'll continue. So in the next 10 to 20 cents, be ready to protect and or do something. On beans, I think we might have seen the highs here. in the last few days. Unless we have bad weather, whereas the corn, I think we've seen the lows on that report of last week.
And Dan Zwicker is Zwicker Consulting.
Longer term, I think the beans are also in a position to maybe show some price strength from a technical perspective. We basically have spent 12 months trading sideways here, and we're kind of at the upper end of that range here at $9. If the beans could regroup and post a good solid close, maybe after next week's report, I think we got to get through next week's report. I think beans then would be in position to probably add some value as we go on into the planting season.
And Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
Yeah, as usual, I definitely want to see producers know exactly where their break-even price levels are and be ready to defend any sort of rallies that we get. I don't want to get terribly aggressive, but selling in increments at profitable levels will definitely put you in a position where you could, have a decent year. I'm kind of like Pete. I'm not so sure that the bean market is going to be able to take out the highs we saw there last week, but, it remains to be seen. I think with corn, you probably have a little better chance this summer of getting a weather-related rally, and especially whenever I think that, corn acres probably going to be coming down and bean acres most likely going to grow.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.